Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And later today, we will be having an interview with Raul Romero, who is a...
Footballer.
No, he has been a policy advisor to a number of senators up on the Hill. So we'll be talking about...
He's Venezuelan.
And we'll be talking about the decision of the Inter-American Court on Human Rights, which... if actioned, will bring gay marriage to 16 countries in one go, reaching 280 million people. And we're talking about some of those countries being rather devout Catholic countries. And other countries like Haiti is on the list.
Oh, okay.
Some of them like Colombia, Brazil, Argentina already have marriage.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But the majority of these ones don't. Now, Canada, as I mentioned later, is not affected because it's not a party, and we'll get into the reasons why in our interview a little later today. Now, before we jump into that, I wanted to get your sort of reaction or feedback to what really annoyed me, and I don't know how to respond.
Okay.
Because a part of me is like, ah, typical. And a part of me is like, well, you know, how much is we as the Willful West can respond?
Yeah.
So, on our show, we have talked multiple times about ISIS, the so-called Islamic State, or Daesh, you know, taking... gay men, or who are the accused of being gay men, they could be effeminate men, they could be anything like that, and literally tossing them from buildings to their death as trash. In fact, in one case I remember, ISIS leadership found another ISIS leader with a young boy, I believe he was about 15 or 16, accused him of being gay and threw him from the top of the building, and the ISIS leader carried on as if nothing had happened.
Oh.
So it's, I mean, there's moral policing and then there's selective moral policing.
It's kind of a Roman thing. One of the things that the Romans hated the Greeks for
is whether or not you're a recipient versus an active party. Yeah, I know, I get that.
Yeah.
The issue that's got my blood a little boiling at the moment is the son of a gun, the piece of human filth.
Right.
That ordered these young boys thrown from a building, like they're nothing more than paper waste, was caught. He was arrested by Iraqi security forces.
Okay.
So Iraqis upholding Iraq law in the civilian government arrested. And I'm like, thank God.
Yeah.
Great news.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great. For about less than 24 hours.
Okay.
Because... apparently, for $7,500 bribe, you can toss somebody from a building in Iraq.
Mm.
And he walked away.
A lot of this is just, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that a narrow gate is not known as a needle. So when Jesus said that a rich man has as much chances of getting into heaven as a camel getting through the eye of a needle, he was just being saucy. He wasn't... it turns out that it's a myth about... I mean, really, that this is just... absolute power corrupts absolutely, and that, you know, if you can use your wealth to get out of a whole bunch of stuff, and
I feel like essentially the only thing we can do about it is be sad and upset and annoyed and angry, and I'm feeling lots of feelings right now about this. The fact that a man will probably go back to ordering men to be thrown up, boys to be thrown off buildings, and it is deplorable, and I hope that whatever version of hell he believes in becomes to be his existence once he leaves this world, which would be a better place without him. But it just baffles me. Now, I don't know what the Canadian services are doing in terms of its mission in Iraq. I believe there is some Canadian presence in Iraq. But, you know, maybe that's a question that we'll follow up with the Canadian government to find out, you know, is there training being provided to the Iraqi services to maybe not be bribed out of murdering lunatics?
Well, I mean, the problem is, I mean, what are they going to do about it? Like, are they going to track him down? That would be interfering.
They'll be tracking him down again. Like, I mean,
but that
they
would be
found him and caught
doing
him.
The job of the Iraqi police forces.
Who didn't? Who did the job, and then somebody got bribed, and he let him go. Like, it's just...
well, I mean, if he got bribed to get let go... Oh, okay. Well, no, he's...
They caught him.
Yeah, no, but there's...
And then they paid off the right person, and he walked away again.
Well, that means that was like a jailbreak, right? It's not that the court has declared him to be innocent.
No, he just paid his way out of it.
Oh, so there's still a warrant on him.
Well, I mean, it's just... Oh, it just... it. I read that this week.
I mean, I'm not going to say...
And it annoyed me.
You're right, it's infuriating, but it's not that they made the court case go away. It's that they just jailbreaked him, and that's...
Yeah. So, another story
that
I'd like your reaction to. There's been news circulating that now China owns a majority through the Kunlan Group of Grindr.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening is that...
Just like Coca-Cola owns most of the world's, like, beverages.
Or water and so on.
Well,
yeah,
Pepsi owns most of the water. Coca-Cola just owns the beverages.
But anyway, so... The Chinese own Grindr.
Okay.
And apparently what's happening is they're actually just compiling en masse data sets on all of its users.
Okay.
So if they need to put a little bit of pressure on, let's say, the government of Canada, then they know all of the gay politicians, ministers, political aides, also all of their dirty little secrets in Grindr. All of those dick pics that you've shared, and they're all in the Grindr profile and in the Grindr data packet. And now security experts are concerned that these intelligence profiles are being prepared on people in government in lots of foreign countries. Because let's face it, Grindr's the go-to, so the chances are...
It is the foyer of the gay male community.
It is, it's exactly. So yeah, I mean, if you're a homo in the State Department, you've probably got a Grindr profile, which does that open you up to,
so this is,
you know, leverage?
In a way, it's a bad example, but in a way, it's a fantastic example. I don't know if you recall what Anthony Weiner's response was a year and a half ago when they correctly identified the photos in question as being his, and he kind of just said, yep, that was me. Now, it was maybe not a good example because the States is very conservative when it comes to sexual things, and he ended up having to step down eventually. But in terms of the media circus, it disappeared instantly. The moment he just fessed up and said, yep, yes, sir, that was, those are my pictures. The media had no ground to stand on, and this is the big difference between how different countries dealt with McCarthyism back in the day when you would identify a homosexual. Some people would be like, yeah, what are you going to do about it? That's me. I mean, it's only blackmail if you don't want the information.
Exactly.
If you don't care.
But, I mean, it's what's being alleged is that the government of China is uniquely, in this case, using information that's incredibly private and intimate and freely given.
Yeah, you're saying that this is a form of intelligence and or counterintelligence depending on how they
use they're creating profiles on thousands and thousands of people.
So
now,
is Facebook.
Allegedly.
So is Google.
I mean, but Google isn't trying to pressure foreign governments into better trade deals. I mean, actually, yes, it is.
I'm sorry, but...
But they're not using your leaked nudes to do so. So apparently, it's worth saying that Grindr has said to the world, still an American company, American registered company, and has to abide by American privacy law. Now, we know that as an American company, it's subject to the Patriot Act. So if you didn't want your intimate pictures seen by the American government, I'm sorry, too late.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is, China is not a democracy. So if the Chinese government says, you're a Chinese company, give it to me now, the company has one option, which is yes. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So the company is saying, no, still American, which I have little faith in because of the Patriot Act. But the Chinese is claiming this is not a thing. But security experts are going, holy heck. Maybe you want to switch to a not Chinese-owned dating app.
Well, I mean...
Or maybe don't put things that you can have used against you on any app.
Well, I mean, that's true anyway. And we've spoken in the past on multiple occasions with multiple news stories of databases and all sorts of sites that collect images, collect information, collect identities, usually just as a form of sort of like, you know, free of charge porn exchange. Really, you just need one pick that you can download online, do it from an obscure site that nobody goes to, spread it around being like, hey, baby, this is me. Who is you? And then you get their photo and now you can just pass it along. It's a pretty common problem in the community for someone to message you and be like, hey, baby, and it's your roommate. And you're like, hello, what's going on here? And it just turns out that somebody you know got their photo stolen. Well, maybe not stolen because, you know, they gave it, but, you know, they got their identity stolen, I guess you could say. I mean, it's a...
Well, I saw when I was working with the Auto Police, it came to our attention, a Tumblr blog.
Right.
And if you look through the history of the feed, it was just men on Grindr on a car journey from Toronto to Ottawa to Montreal. Mm-hmm. And when you get into the Ottawa area, there's like people I recognized. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, these people have been catfished.
Yeah.
And then it's just a case of like, how'd you clean up that mess? But it happens all the time.
Once it's on the internet, there it is to stay.
Well, I mean, the polite thing to do would be to let them know.
Yeah.
And, you know, try and get it to at least that blog to be shut down. But you're right. Once it's out there, you're kind of over a barrel.
Yeah.
Now, we'll be jumping to our interview next, and we've got a couple more stories when we get back after that. I'm excited that The Fevers, which is an auto band fronted by Sarah Bradley, who's actually got an EP coming out soon. Totally excited about that. This is a song that got released in June of last year. It's called It's Coming, and this is The Fevers band. Absolutely fantastic. Great band. It's Coming. And we'll be back just after this.
Is high, can you feel the moon? Say goodnight, they'll be soon. They're coming for you. You cannot hide, there's nothing left to do. You cannot fight it, he's pushing through. He's coming for me and you.
Paralyzing pressure.
And welcome to Back to Cannqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and we are joined right now in an interview about the Inter-American Human Rights Court of Human Rights. I have to check my notes there. Joined by Roel, how are you doing?
Hi, pleasure to be here with you, Luke.
Excellent. Now, you spent some time doing a number of roles supporting senators on the Hill, in the Canadian Senate. So what's your take on this? You, of course, are from Venezuela. And before we get into your take, maybe we should kind of explain to the audience more of what we're talking about. Now, at the top of the hour, we did discuss that we will be talking about the landmark decision by the Inter-American Court on Human Rights and the kind of impact it's had. Now, people may be forgiven for not having heard about this because not that many people are talking about it. Did you hear much of it before I flagged it up to your attention?
To be honest, no, I hadn't seen much coverage of it. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, how gay news, whether they're extremely positive or extremely negative, sometimes doesn't get the coverage that it deserves. Like you said, this is a landmark decision that's affecting over 200 million people in this hemisphere, yet, you know, we're not really giving it the attention that it needs.
Absolutely. Now, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights is kind of a mechanism or a tool that was developed out of the American Convention on Human Rights. Now, Canadians may be forgiven for not knowing what this is. Well, Canada is actually not a signatory to the American Convention on Human Rights, as it doesn't actually apply, or it doesn't work very well with Canada's current stance on the kind of abortion debate. So the Convention on Human Rights was drafted by the primarily Catholic countries in Central America. And there, I think it's like section 4.1 states the right to life. And it's written in such a way that kind of the pro-life side in Canada here would have a field day. So the Canadian government has stayed away. Mm-hmm. Now, the United States has signed it but not ratified it, and it's kind of open to all countries in the OAC, the Organization of American States. Now, what I thought was really interesting is that this landmark decision is hardly, if at all, affecting any of the kind of English countries in Central America. So British Virgin Islands, the US Virgin Islands,
sure.
Bermuda, and a lot of the territories, the French territories. It's actually, Jamaica was on the list. No, Jamaica was not on the list as one of the ones that would be affected. But rather, it's something that's not coming from the kind of, this isn't something that's being pushed by American or British or French interests in the area.
It could be argued that, like, those U.S. and British jurisdictions have to already abide by the decisions that have been made back in the homeland, and those people probably have, you know, a legal avenue to which they could pursue their rights, basically, or ask for their rights to be protected. But, yeah, I mean, then you have countries like, we just mentioned one Caribbean country, but I'm sure there's others that do not have to follow those jurisdictions and laws, and like they're basically choosing not to respect this court's decision, and thereby they're, you know, marginalizing yet again their queer population.
I mean, let's look at what the decision really did. And essentially what the decision boils down to is for about 16 countries, 20 countries in total, but four of them already have, are up to code, so to speak. But for the other 16 countries, all of the rights that are provided to opposite sex couples, there's not really much grounds there on which to discriminate and against same-sex couples. So it effectively said overnight, if you do something for straight couples, that has to be also available to gay couples, which is
wonderful.
Huge.
It's a wonderful, and it's wonderful to see the leaders of these countries, or of a number of these countries, being not only tolerant of the decision, but accepting it and even promising to adopt it in its entirety and being basically proud of this accomplishment. So yeah, it's a great move forward for gay people across the Western Hemisphere. Like, the more international organizations that do take a stand and recognize that we are persons, like we were talking earlier about the comparison of like the suffrage movement here in Canada when women were seeking their right to vote, and they're basically asking the courts, are we persons yet? And in a lot of the cases, we as gay people are not persons yet in many places. In Latin America, because we were not fully protected by the law. Like, just because you have the tolerance of the gay culture or the gay scene, if you're not protected by the law, then you are therefore like a second class citizen because your rights are not being protected. Mm-hmm. So this is huge. Like, but just like in the U.S., you can be a signatory, and if it's not ratified by your national legislature, then you have a problem of enforcement. So it's important to make sure, follow through with this story and see, are all these countries going to be enforcing what's written? Because if it's just on paper, then it doesn't really...
Well, there'll be some real impacts. So Trinidad and Tobago left the convention in 1998 because the judges all agreed to introduce new rules around applying the death penalty. Mm. And Trinidad and Tobago would much rather not have rules regarding how they applied the death penalty. And so they walked away from the treaty. Now, Venezuela left in 2012. They accused the courts of trying to meddle in the elections that were happening at the time. So I believe in 2011, 2012, they kind of denounced the court. Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's the end of the list.
Sure.
Of people who disagree fundamentally with this court, who are subject to it. Now, you seem a bit more of a pessimistic than maybe I am, but do you think that some countries will look at this decision and do what Trinidad and Tobago did and walk away? I mean, we've got very Catholic countries.
To sound pessimistic. I am optimistic. I'm hoping that this is an amazing step forward, and I'm optimistic that it will lead to real change, like on the ground, basically. But you know, we just have to be realistic that you have to keep your eye on the legislators and the powers that be to follow through, because it's very easy to like get wrapped up in some summit and like, hey, yeah, let's sign some document, and like then everybody goes home and nobody remembers like what has to be done. Like, unless there's real change on the streets and people are actually being protected and giving full access to their human rights, then it has not been a success. So I'm looking forward to see the progress as it develops now that the decision's been made. And to your question, yeah, I mean, we have seen in every decision, like even here across North America, every time we make a step forward, the opposition, let's say a religious, moral kind of section of the population, or I don't want to call it the right, but you know, sometimes those points of views are associated with the right of the political spectrum. So there is an organization of those groups to kind of push against the progress with claims of like, this is not like where we should be going. This is not the right step. So I think we can expect some of that pushback in some countries, because even though in Latin America, in a lot of places, you do have a pseudo-tolerance of gay people, it's not really, it's kind of one of those things that like, it's there, but people like rather not even like acknowledge it. And that's very problematic, because once you're trying to become a person and get your full rights recognized, then you're kind of like breaking the status quo and changing the paradigm, and that will always cause some rift.
Mm-hmm.
With people.
Well, we saw, we reported a few months ago about the attempts by the Haitian legislature to kind of introduce rules that would have criminalized same-sex sexual behavior. Now, that effort, I think it kind of died out, and we haven't heard anything else since then. But Haley would be subject to this. So, you know, just a few months ago, we're reporting about Haley trying to ban gay sexual intercourse, and now they're being slapped with a court decision that says that, you know, gay people should marry in Haiti. Now, Haiti is a great example for why Canadians should pay attention, because the one of the Haitians get the most aid from the government of Canada and the government of Quebec. Huge aid recipients from both the Quebec provincial government and the federal government of Canada. And of course, we have a substantial diaspora population here in Canada as well. So all of these things kind of combine. We are intricately linked to these countries in Latin America. Now, do you think, as somebody who, you know, has very much lived in, like you said, Venezuela, and you've visited many other countries as well, that on the ground, that because this isn't the United States saying you should do this, but rather Costa Rica that came up with was pushing for it, do you think that because it's sort of coming out of decision makers from the community of states themselves, that it might be more listened to than if it was Canada pushing for this, for example?
That's an interesting point. I think I'm gonna try to be optimistic, and I think that there is a growing sentiment among Latin Americans, and even though there is a very conservative element to our culture sometimes due to religion in some places, we're also very modern nations. Like, you know, we are following, most countries are following, you know, the liberal democratic paths that are being set by countries like Canada and stuff like that. Not that we're not playing a fundamental part in it as well, as Latin American countries. But I think there is a growing sentiment in Latin American countries to recognize the rights of gay people. That's my optimistic point of view. But I also do fear that this will definitely jostle some of the more conservative elements, whether it be the Catholic Church or, you know, just, you know, the whole stereotype of machismo, it doesn't come out of anywhere. You know, there is a very kind of like, to use like a queer term, like a binary kind of like gender role specific kind of culture as well. So anything that changes the culture of a nation is going to cause friction, and I do expect that there'll be lots of people who will be outraged. But you know, if the government follows through, then people will respect and accept the decisions. And just like they can accept gay people walking in the streets, probably, I mean, not that there's probably not a lot of violence against gay people also in Latin America.
Do you think for the lies of the sort of everyday gay men in places like, I mean, there's some places where it won't change, like Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, and Uruguay already have gay marriage. Sure. So they're not going to see a big change because those rules are already in place.
Yeah, but I mean, this decision saying that like every aspect of the law has to be equal. So that's monumental, like you said. And I do believe there will be a change in countries that do enforce this, because when you are protected under the law, you are recognized, and you have authority. You have the power of the state behind you, and when push comes to shove, you know that you're going to be protected. And like, people might have their opinions, whether they be right or wrong. People are entitled to them, I suppose. But but the law is the law, and if you're protected, you're protected.
Absolutely. Now, it did make a big decision also in terms of the rights of trans folks. It is now being decided that trans folks should be able to change the name on ID documentation. So for some countries you could, for some countries you couldn't. For some countries you needed medical doctors to certify that you're insane. To be, you know, there's a lot of things. But these are the kind of things that, you know, let's not forget that was the case in Canada for a long time. Sure. You know, you needed two doctors to sign off that you had a specific mental illness that required you to live as the other person, the other gender. I mean, that was not, I mean, that's recent memory. Now, when you were talking about the push from the religion and from the right of the center, now, the courts were invited countries to implement this by decree, essentially say, you know, this decision is made, this is the new rule, and then introduce legislation to kind of back up their decrees. I don't know if that can be the case in some countries, depends on the political systems. Sure. But what I want to focus on is their comments that the court, the Inter-American Court on Human Rights, said in its decision that it believed that the countries would be able to adapt this in respecting the needs of religions and the secular state. Mm-hmm. Essentially saying that, yes, we have a powerful religious group and many, many people in these communities have faith, but also believing that the state can create a secular system and a religious one and have both of those in equal balance. And I think that was very encouraging. Now, what's not encouraging is when that kind of religious fervor is exported. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings me to my next point that I wanted to discuss, which is Romania in Europe. So the European Court of Justice is reviewing a claim. So a Belgian man who married his American partner has moved to the Romania. Mm. Now, in the EU, you have the right to travel in the Schengen area. I can never pronounce that correctly. And you should have the same rights in one country as the next. That is the fundamental principle of the EU, the right to travel. But in Romania, the answer is no, because they don't recognize gay marriage. So the husband is not recognized, not given the right to a boat. So that's where this claim is coming. Now, the decision that was introduced essentially is arguing that no matter where you are in Europe, you should have the same rights everywhere, which is the case unless you're gay. Mm-hmm. And it looks like the EU 28 judges will probably agree with that decision. But the reason why it's important is because you have to look at the context of what's happening in Romania at the time. And they're looking at a constitutional referendum on whether or not to actually ban homosexuality outright, including sexual acts and marriage and all the various rights. And that ban is being pushed and pushed and pushed and motivated by the United States evangelical churches. Mm. Kim Davis, the woman who famously denied marriages even when she was told that she had to and was sent to prison as a result of her defiance, went and visited to kind of drum up anti-gay marriage support. So it's huge news that in the United States they're exporting this sort of religious extremism, and I think that's very much what it is, and trying to get positions.
Now you're breaking your rule about not discussing the US, because I have many things to say about that.
We try to avoid the states, but I mean, this is clearly an indication now of where US meddling, and this is not state sanctioned, but US meddling in Europe is trying to...
Well, we have to, if we're going to talk about the states, we have to remember that what's going on in the states is a very interesting situation, because you have a president who is basically putting on a circus, and it's constantly a distraction from the real powers that be, the Pences and the Santoris of the world. The Rick Santorums, I'm sorry, of the world, who are very conservative, right-wing people with a very homophobic, anti-gay agenda, and they're not hiding that fact at all. Like, in fact, it's part of their platform. The way that they like erased basically the word gay, homosexual, like from every bit of their platform was like, it was outrageous what happened at the Republican National Convention in terms of basically wanting to erase gay people from the record, basically. And we have to remember, those are the powers that are pulling the strings in the U.S. Trump is like, you know, a distraction, let's just put it that way.
Well, it's the political pundits have all, broadly speaking, agreed that when Trump makes some kind of decision, it, you know, typically favors the sort of very socially conservative grouping of Republicans. So
I strongly believe that Trump will back anything that is spun to him in a way that says to him, this is going to make you the most popular guy. They're like, yeah. All he cares about, like, the reports that are coming out of the White House are just unbelievable in terms of, like, the way that he actually consumes information. You know, he doesn't read headlines unless it is, allegedly, he doesn't read headlines unless his name is in it. You know, he doesn't read a thing. He doesn't bother to, like, you know, follow what's going on. He gets bored with it. And, you know, watching The National just on, I believe, Thursday, the author of Fire and Fury was giving his anecdotes about the White House. And, you know, he's talking about, like, when Syria was escalating and, like, things were really at a crisis situation over there, Trump couldn't be bothered to, like, or not couldn't be bothered, but, like, couldn't understand the situation. Like, you know, there's claims of him being dyslexic and, like, having, like, learning disabilities, not that, you know, and, like, it's very problematic when, like, Ivanka has to come into the Oval Office with pictures and, like, you know, basically...
Now, I don't know how much I trust the work of Michael
Wolff.
Yeah. Now, I know that his credibility was in question.
Sure.
And you know what really put me off him the most was him talking about his own credibility.
It's like, okay, maybe Michael Wolff is not the most credible source in the world. I can give you that. But when the president... The vitriol, like the vile flows out of his mouth like an open sewer, basically. Like
his own,
like,
Twitter account,
exactly,
is
the
a damnation.
This week about
now,
shithole countries, like that was the most outrageous thing I have heard come out of that office so far. Like,
and I would typically do a content warning for that, but I think so many news media have commented on his exact quote of how he described these countries. It is truly ridiculous. And he called Haiti one of those countries.
Yeah.
Now, Canada's a
and
proud...
And, like, you know,
El
Salvador. You know, he's used to running these companies of his, and he thinks he can just fire the Haitians. You're fired, Salvadorians. 200,000 people out of the country. No, that's not how it works, Mr. President. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now, El Salvador is one of the countries that will be progressing forward with this new court decision from the Inter-American Court on Human Rights. And I think it's really interesting, and this kind of speaks to the kind of media backlash when, you know, he said he wants more people from countries like Norway, and Norway's like, we're not going anywhere near
your
country.
Or Czech Republic, you know, like all his wives are from the, or, you know, like,
but
three out of whatever, four or five that he's had.
My point here is that, you know, in terms of El Salvador and Haiti, these are countries that are, if they agree to this new human rights court decision, may well put themselves in a position which is more socially progressive than several states in the U.S. I mean, and that would be kind of ironic when El Salvador is less of a asshole place to live than South Carolina. You know,
sure.
It could be quite a whole circle conversation there.
Right.
So, in a closing remark, do you believe that the lives of, I mean, this affects 280 odd million people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that lives will improve as a result of this decision?
Yes, I do think that every time a internationally recognized body takes the courageous step to, you know, do what's right and recognize the rights of gay people, it changes people's lives and it tells the world we're people, you know, we're persons too.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and I'm very excited to have had this conversation. We'll be picking up with some more news, and also there's news of a great study that came out. I was pretty interested about it, how sniffing a partner's odor reduces stress. So that was something that actually made the news this year. But we're not going to get into that. Now we're going to play a new song by Troy Sivan, and I was quite excited about it. It's got quite the steamy video, and we'll be back just after this.
Shine on, diamond, don't make me wait another day. 'Cause passion is passion, you know it just as well as me. Now let's stop running from
from love, running from love. Let's start, my baby. Let's start running from us, running from us. Let's start, my baby. Oh my, my, my. Between your teeth, go slow, no, no, go fast. You like it just as much as me. Now let's stop running from love, running from love. Let's stop, my baby. Let's stop running from us, running from us.
To Can Queer, Home of Canada's Queer Media. That was our interview with Raoul. I did digress a little bit into discussing Trump, and I forgot to name the track that we just listened to, which was Troye Sivan's My, 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 steamy track, I'm a Fan. Now, I tipped off the end of that segment with what we're discussing right now, and I hope you're ready for this, Sebastian.
Okay.
But it's another study.
Oh, I like studies.
And you know how much we on this show like studies. Weirdly, this study only done on straight couples. Kind of okay. Disappointed.
Okay.
But it is a University of British Columbia study that found that sniffing the scent of your male partner reduces stress.
Okay.
When they're not there.
Okay.
Like, the smell, in general, reduces stress. So the way they did it is they got male-female partners, and they told the male to wear a brand new shirt with no deodorant and other stuff for a day or so. And then they took all those shirts. And then all the women, they gave some of them their boyfriends T-shirts. Some of them they give somebody else's boyfriend a T-shirt, and some of them they just give clean T-shirts.
New T-shirts.
Yeah. And they found that in the stress test that they did following that, that the women who had took a good old sniff of the T-shirts of the boyfriends that had been wearing it, like, were way more chill doing the stress tests compared to the women who had, like, the non-shirt or
the
somebody else's. Samples,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They also found that women were able to identify the scents of their, some of them were able to identify it as their boyfriend's smell, which is pretty neat. So, yeah, if you're feeling stressed out, take a big old whiff of the guy next to you.
This doesn't surprise me, because they found similar things years ago with regards to women and their babies. When they smell the scent of their own baby, and they can identify the scent of just some random baby and their own baby, they can tell the difference.
For me, they all smell like poop.
Well, I mean, it's
like
it's
baby poop.
It's also not your baby that you've been spending time with,
this
and
is true.
It's different people have different, you know, odors, and it's this weird sort of, like, I don't know, Victorian holdover or something that, sort of Western cultures in general don't really admire smell as being a thing. Like, I don't, I know you've seen me do this, and you've teased me for this, where I'm just sitting around and I'll pick an object up and smell it and then put it back down. And you're like, what are you doing there? It's like, it looked interesting. I wondered what it smelled like. But there's this thing where we don't really think of smell that much as being a thing. But yeah, no, smell's a huge deal. And there's even, they've shown that, I believe it was in the Amazon, they found hunter-gatherer tracks, and they just, not tracks, hunter-gatherer tribes, and they would just bring them mushrooms. From, like, mushrooms from overseas, mushrooms from around the world, and they could just smell it and tell if it was poisonous or not, from the smell. And some of these were things that, like, because when you're talking about poisonous mushrooms, very few poisonous mushrooms can kill you. Most of them just give you the runs really bad. But they could even identify that. They could identify the toxic ones and the non-toxic ones from the edible ones, just from the smell alone. But if you use your sense of smell all the time, I don't know. None of this alarms me. Smell. That's, in conclusion, smell.
Exactly.
Also, actually, humans have a stronger sense of smell than pigs do. And the only reason why pigs are better truffle sniffers than humans is because pigs are closer to the ground. If you got on all fours and were willing to crawl through an entire forest, you too could be a truffle snuffer.
That's 2018 life goals. If you've decided to become a truffle sniffer,
yes.
Please let us know at @talkkanquia. You can find us on Twitter. Now,
and go to a garden supply store and get those like knee pads for gardeners, because you're going to scrape up your lower half if you
this
don't.
This is true. Yeah. This is true.
What's the next story?
It's not often that we tell our listeners to invest in good knee pads, but when we do,
right?
Relate to the gardening. That's usually...
Yes. Yes.
Exciting news about Tel Aviv. Now, for me, we don't discuss Israel very often.
Right,
and
yeah.
There are reasons why.
Yeah.
But they've made a decision recently that I am going to comment on.
Okay.
Because I think this one decision, I believe, could be a good demonstration to the Canada on how to move forward. And that is that they have removed the blood ban for gay men donating blood. And it's not one of those, we've removed the blood ban if you don't have any sex at all for a year. And can count from 10 backwards and are not European. It's not one of those with caveat. It's like a straight up, you can donate blood.
Right.
We'll take it, test it.
Which they should be doing anyway.
Freeze it.
Right.
And test it again.
Okay.
And then use it.
Okay.
And it's that double blind testing that is guaranteeing the safety procedure. So yeah, Israel is now allowing donations from gay men. So without having to forsake all romantic relationship for 6 months or whatever.
Well, the most important part of that is that if they're taking blood donations, that means that they have just indirectly lifted the indirect unofficial ban on organ donations. So if you are a gay man who rides a motorcycle, you too are now 20 minutes to 2 years away from donating an organ.
Chelsea Manning.
Right.
And when I saw this, my first thought was like, how is she going to get security clearance? Like, she literally leaked state secrets.
Yes.
She has treason on her criminal record.
Right.
So Chelsea Manning is running for Senate in, I believe it's in Maryland or somewhere. Let me just double check here. See if I can find the exact location. But yeah, no, she's running. She announced it. It is in Maryland. The Washington Post broke the story. And I watched the video, and it was, like, paid for by Chelsea Manning. And this poor... She needs some videography help. Like, I mean, saying that, I've never seen a good politician motivational video in my life. Like, good video making and politics are like, they just don't coexist. It's just not a thing.
I think the best way to go about it is to just embrace it and deliberately do it badly. Because, like, if you want to see, you know, a slideshow of commercials so bad you can't help but love it, then America really has cornered that market.
I mean, at one point, she's, like, stood there holding a rose in an alley with graffiti. And there's a dramatic shot. And I'm like, why is she holding a rose?
Right, yeah.
And, like, we've been rewatching the Sailor Moon series. And I'm like, is she the mask, tuxedo mask? Is that the messaging I'm getting here?
Well, I mean, if anything, like, Sailor Venus.
But, like, why the rose?
Yeah, well, because she's Sailor Venus.
Okay, but, yeah. I mean, so I was confused by the messaging. And a lot of it was like, politicians can't be trusted. You know, screw the system, let's change it. Let's really bring in real change. And nothing is different from electing the same old politician than someone who's actually been convicted of a crime, which would be a novel change.
Well, as a whistleblower, though, and it's also interesting because Maryland is a predominantly libertarian state, so I'm surprised she didn't do anything about her military history, because like that libertarians tend to.
So the conservatives have been kind of in glee a little bit because they believe that now the Democratic Party is going to find itself in a position where it'll have to disavow itself of Chelsea Manning.
Okay.
So Chelsea Manning's been kind of the darling of the Democratic Party, you know, whistleblowing, we need this, we need to speak truth to power, and so on. And it blew the lid off of a lot of the intelligence gathering.
Yeah.
But now, how can you have a senator convicted of whistleblowing? How can they be trusted with state secrets? And that's the fundamental question that everyone is going to be going like, oh... Ah, but at the same time, it is an openly trans person.
Yeah.
It is someone who believes in convictions.
Yeah.
And acts on them.
Yes.
That isn't just putting up platitudes and bending with the wind.
Was
which
willing to do jail time.
It was willing to go to jail for what they believed in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that is phenomenal. You know, and I, if I was in Maryland, would vote for Chelsea Manning.
Okay.
I'd also point you in the direction of some good videographers, but that's mainly it's the... I'm with her, is what I'm saying.
I would want to see the platform otherwise, because I have a tendency to vote for the individual, not for the party.
We'll keep an eye on the story. We are hoping to roll out CanQueer on home devices. We're looking to get up onto TuneIn.
Like toasters?
No, well, I mean, if your toaster has a voice assistant, then yes. But we're not like talking like Google Home, Alexa, the Apple Pods, stuff like that.
Okay.
So if you have TuneIn on your system, we hopefully will be there soon. So another way to hear our great show. That's all we have time for. We're playing out with Years and Years and King. All of our tracks are kind of like an electronic theme this week, which I kind of am groovy with. That's all from me.
And me, I'm Sebastian. Thanks for listening.